We make jokes about there's just too many episodes of this show. Like this week, we're already going to be tacking on at episode 584. I think that's right. But apparently, just like scale and understanding when to stop is like we're actually not that bad at it because this week we got to watch the Smash Nintendo Direct. But we're going to go ahead and start with some introductions. John.
I'm here again for my, I don't know how many episodes this has been, but I've been doing this for 11 years. I realize that.
Wait, what?
recently. This podcast.
This podcast isn't even 11 years old, is it?
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it is.
12 years old.
It's been about 10 and a half for
yes.
Well, 10 and two thirds.
Yeah,
for John.
10 and a half. Yep.
Are you fucking for real?
Yeah, January 2008. That's when I got invited
you,
on this
James.
Podcast. Yep.
No.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh God.
And this, well, and the thing is too that, like, I mean, I came on episode 82.
Yeah.
So there were episodes that I was actually on prior to that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So when I became a regular member, so yeah, probably about 11 years.
Oh my God. How long have we been on
anyways.
Season 5? How long have we been on season 5? Greg, you probably know the answer to this. How long have we been
long
on season
time.
5?
It's been 3 years plus.
I've gotten right around three,
I guess.
Is it time to start calling it season 6?
I can tell you, James, I've gotten my $25 out of this battle pass. I can tell you that.
Fucking hell, John. Anyway, it's August 9th, 2018. Time just keeps going. Just goes forever.
It does.
It's never going to stop.
An interminable march.
It's never going to stop. Oh my God. All right. Well, that's haunting to think about. I'm joined today also by Mr. Greg Leahy.
Oh, hey, everyone.
Guillaume continues his, John, I don't feel like we've done a good job making fun of what Guillaume's up to.
Yeah.
Last year we were all over him. We were like, he's just Quebecois socialist vacation nightmare. But like now we're just like, whatever. He's on vacation. Who gives a crap?
Yeah. You get about 1 week with me and then you're dead to me. So Guillaume's dead to me right now.
Do you remember who Guillaume is?
Vaguely.
French says,
Yeah. There's a lot of Quebecois spoken on this podcast from what I remember, but it's all vague to me.
It's very mostly vague. You talking shit. So in his place, we're joined today by Mr. Ren McNulty.
Season 6 premiere. Let's do this.
I have to
God.
Rearrange the opening music if we do that. I don't want to do that. Let's do it next week when Guillaume's back on the edit.
Fine. Season 5 finale. I'll burn it to the ground for you.
Don't worry. We've already started. So real quick, Seren is recently relocated, so we're going to have some audio stuff. I'm not going to make a huge effort to try to make it sound super clean. We'll do what we can, but you know, if you hear some echo and stuff, it's okay.
Sorry, y'all.
We're still somehow more professional than some podcasts I listen to. So obviously, as we talked about, and if you listen to the show, you undoubtedly have seen it. Yesterday, Nintendo dropped their Smash Direct, which was not their E3 presentation. It was the Direct that picked up on... really, I guess this is probably the big one before the game comes out. Like, it was pretty detailed. I kind of expected this like this level of detail later. Closer to release.
Yeah, well, they did pledge to like reveal all the characters beforehand
yeah,
this
that's
time.
True.
So
and there's a whole mode they are not talking about. There's probably one more.
Yeah,
I know there's one more, but I would have expected this one to be a little bit lighter.
And we've got I guess you could make that argument, but I mean, we said at the time during the E3 presentation, it's like, yeah, I think there's probably going to be some dedicated Smash Direct, so that's what made their choice of approach for that kind of odd. And some of this stuff seems like it would have been better suited to E3 than the kind of more nuts and bolts kind of technical, like how the game is changing, kind of about the little short hop attacks and the speed.
But
of the game
Olimar's helmet can crack.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Don't worry, it comes back.
I assume they have their reasons, but it does seem odd that not just in terms of the volume, the length of time given to Smash in E3 when everybody knew there would be directs like this, at least one, but you know, I would imagine more than one, before the game would launch in December. But also just the nature of how they chose to sort of move those things around. It was the Castlevania being present, you know, is a kind of big kind of headline.
It was
kind
a big
of thing
pop
that you might think would play well at an E3, you know, kind of versus some of the minutia that they went into then. But who knows exactly what went into that?
I think the numbers porn that they threw up in this one too is probably the kind of thing that you could just sort of use as like beat points on an E3 presentation. Cause this was where they basically said, like, let's talk about how ultimate this ultimate game is. And they're like, if you listen to all the songs in the thing end to end, you would die before it finished. And it's like, okay, well, that's, you may actually have gone too far.
Well,
we have 32 Castlevania themes. It's like, okay.
Well, 34.
34. Okay, sorry.
But, so, no, I mean, their thinking at E3 was that they didn't want much to take away from the central message of everyone is here.
Yeah, so if that was the tagline kind of thing, wasn't it?
So if they had, like, everyone is here, also we have Castlevania, then one of those is going to get picked up and it's not the Castlevania one.
Right.
So by staggering it, there's another wave of headlines that can come out about, holy shit, Castlevania, and also I guess that gator thing from Donkey Kong Country is here.
I think even K-Rool is significantly more eventful than Ridley, who's just nothing. He's just a pterodactyl with arms and legs. He's like a bad Pokemon design. I'm not wrong. That's the worst part.
Yeah,
like I said that as a joke, and then I'm like, it kind of is.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad Pokemon designs, but I digress.
But like either one of those, you're right. Would have gone, especially the Belmonts, would have eclipsed the everyone is here message. But they really went in on the Castlevania, didn't they? I guess we'll go into that because that's how they started it up. Like, it wasn't just, okay, we've put a Belmont in here. It was, we put a Belmont and a Belmont Echo Fighter in here. We built a Castlevania-themed stage. We put a bunch of enemies in it. We put in a boss Dracula. We've got Alucard assist trophies. It's like, they really went in there. Oh, and then we have a Kid Dracula tease. There's a Kid Dracula tease in that video, which is amazing.
Yeah, yep.
And stupid. And I love it. But, I mean, and I made an allusion to this on Twitter. Like, that team is really good at turning these 8 and 16-bit characters into 3D models.
Better than almost anyone else.
Like, the Mega Man they produced is better than any Mega Man model that Capcom has ever produced in 3D. It just is. I mean, it's dramatically better than what they produced for Mega Man 11. And I like the character for Mega Man 11. It puts that fucking cartoon that they're signed on to the shame. But their Belmont models are also really cool. And their Alucard model is cool, and he's a really cool looking assist trophy. The stage looks good. What do they call it? The flea and the monster?
The creature.
The creature. Yeah. they look really appropriately stupid and great. Death's model looks amazing. What the hell?
Yeah, well, I guess there was how they chose to announce it, reveal it, I should say, the whole sort of attempted switcheroo, which was undermined by the fact that, you know, the word had effectively leaked of Castlevania being at the crux of this thing the night before. But the whole Luigi's Mansion kind of set up and him having his soul harvested.
Give me Luigi's castle.
Their CG videos, that one and the King K. Rool one, and pretty much all of them they've made, are really good.
Fire Emblem Robin one from Super Smash Bros. For Nintendo 3DS and Wii U remains like the stupidest high production thing that does not need to be this high production ever.
I don't know. This Castlevania one was really expensive. Like, that model of death, which is obviously not the game model. Like, because there's way too much. That's like, that's a movie-level CG model.
Yeah. I mean, go watch the Bowser Jr. trailer, which aired after the game had come out.
This is true. It's so good. And this is... This was kind of the point I was making at the time. Like, I just want to see them keep making characters. I don't even care if the game ever comes out. Just keep showing me new characters and like, doing things with them. And then letting Sakurai edit together clips he thinks is really funny of these characters in action. I don't even care anymore. I don't want to play the game. I just want more of this. That, I mean, I'm kind of sidestepping into the K. Rool stuff. But, like... Even the clips they used of fighting, of him fighting, were like really well put together. Like all the characters just bouncing on his head, or him walking around in a pirate's hat right in time with the music. It's like, this is dumb and beautiful, and this is what I wanted out of that E3 presentation. I wanted to walk away from a Smash presentation and go with the dumb grin thinking, this is so stupid. I'm so happy right now. Because there was a certain, like, we were kind of a little dumbfounded by the everyone is here, but beyond that, it really wasn't like jarring. It was like, oh, this feels like a nice version of Smash for Wii U. This makes it feel more like what I want out of when they've announced a new Smash game, which is like, hey, we're announcing characters and they're really silly and they're not people you expected. I mean, granted, the Belmont situation, I expected Anne Belmont. I did not expect the Belmont Echo Fighter. Richter, so like when Richter got revealed, I still went, oh shit!
I appreciate that. I was jumping a little ahead. When they announced the two Echo Fighters, Sakurai apologized, like, you may have seen this coming, sorry.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, well that's fine. I'm okay with both of these. I mean, they announced five characters. In this one direct. And yeah, three of them are Echo Fighters. But as he points out, the Belmonts are kind of both echoes of each other because they have Richter's moveset from his game.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, like, the uppercut thing, isn't that, when I think of that, I think of Richter as a boss in Symphony of the Night, like, as an enemy.
Richter's kick, though, is definitely from...
It's kind of an amalgam of Belmont stuff, and I guess that's probably, you know, helped them, you know, end up sort of doing two. I mean, it's easy enough anyway, but they're both kind of pretty, as you said, you know, kind of with the whole notion of turning old sprites into models. They're both pretty faithful to that era of their, you know, because obviously they both were redesigned in the kind of Kojima Symphony of the Night style,
right?
Latterly, Simon became like Flamehead, and Richter got a new costume and stuff, and you know, these are, you know, sort of much more interpretations of, you know, the way they were in the, you know, Rondo for Richter and the original Castlevania for Simon Belmont. And yeah, I mean, I'm pretty happy with how they've seemed to have turned out so far. I mean, it was if you go back to even, you know, the quite a few kind of really get back to Brawl where third party characters kind of started to come in, that was probably one of my absolute most wanted things. Was to get Castlevania involved, not just because of the, you know, because I have an affection for the characters or anything, but the musical possibilities was a big part of that, and they certainly played that up with the sort of infomercial style scroll of all the songs that they're using.
That's what I call music ad.
Yeah, it's
just dated you.
They still make those.
No, they don't. You can't convince me they do.
They do. They're on like 70.
Yeah, but I mean, it's nice that it's finally happening. It's always seemed natural, especially, you know, when we got Mega Man in the last, you know, I kind of think of them very much as kind of equal in terms of, you know, third party characters that were very strongly associated with the Nintendo, you know, era of the 80s. So it makes plenty of sense from that point of view. And it also, you know, the way they approach the character in terms of, you know, the reach with the whip and the fact that you could do the little sort of 12 from 4 kind of style and sub weapons, the special attacks, all that thing. You know, it seems, you know, they've really kind of nicely implemented all these touches.
We're at the point now where I'm thinking about like what series would still, like what series from that era still would be cool to make an appearance. Because let's run it down. So we've got Pac-Man, we've got Sonic, we've got Mega Man, we've got Castlevania, we've got Metal Gear. Like, we're really starting to work through some of the, like, the big franchises
It sounds like it's therapy. We're really starting to work through some stuff here.
Yeah, we're making progress. So, I mean,
I would still, it's kind of a little bit overlap to some extent because of the horror sort of theme in common, but I would still like something from Ghosts and Goblins,
yeah,
etc. Like, just like a Red Arrow or an assist trophy or a boss or something, you know, like, it doesn't have to be the character, I guess. I mean, we have seen, you know, Arthur and whatnot in fighting games because of Marvel vs. Capcom, mm-hmm, and stuff, but, you know, I would like to see something from that branch of Capcom stuff, and obviously they are on board, and we saw the Monster Hunter.
Oh, that's right, Monster Hunter was in there.
Yep.
You know, kind of, and I guess that you kind of wonder, might they, especially with how popular Monster Hunter World was, like, would they try and sort of spin a character, an actual character out of it?
The Monster Hunter was DLC for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite.
Yep.
Yeah, so it, you kind of think about that maybe down the line. They did sort of say they're going to reveal all the characters before the game launches, so I guess what that takes away from sort of excitement when people download it on day one, I guess it'll
help sort of drop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing these days, isn't it? I mean, that's kind of drives that kind of way of thinking. But yeah, it'll certainly increase the anticipation for the next Direct or whatever, because I could imagine, you know, a few more kind of really quite impactful announcements yet.
Hey, James.
Yeah?
I've got an idea for an Echo Fighter.
Okay.
For Mega Man, Beck.
Ugh.
You were talking about Mega Man 3D models before.
Yeah, well, yeah, Beck's model sucks.
I know. Imagine if Sora Limited made it, or Bandai Namco.
Of course, on that subject as well, we had Shovel Knight, who, mm-hmm, you know, they've turned into a 3D model as an assist trophy. You know, it's nice to see him in there. It's easy to kind of look at some of the Echo Fighters and then look at characters like Alucard and Shovel Knight and think, you know, you might prefer them to be in there, but obviously it's not the same. You know, these Echo Fighters are really, really close to existing characters. It's nowhere near as much work or challenging to kind of put a Dark Samus in there as it would be to do a Shovel Knight Justice.
Plus,
or Alucard.
Shovel Knight is, so it's, for people who don't know, published by Nintendo in Japan, so that's where that association comes from. It's not necessarily in Japan, it's not a third party character, but also not as popular in Japan.
Yeah.
It took off, but it did not take off the way that it took off here at all.
What I really appreciated about the trophies that they showed this time is they really seem to be focusing on the trophies are characters who are doing things. They're not just like spamming an attack and then disappearing.
And you can KO them. I know they covered this in the E3.
KO the dog. Can't KO the moon.
The moon
is an assist trophy.
Nobody's KO.
What happens on Termina?
What is it, just two moons?
Yeah, there's two moons, yeah. It's kind of like that very heartfelt scene in the original Star Wars, but a lot scarier.
It's true.
With moons instead of suns.
Like, I liked that they showed Alucard's assist trophy basically just griefing people. Like, that was like, oh, that's what this game is going to be now. Even the assist trophies are getting in on the, wow, this is stupid. Because, I mean, he has an active dodge to avoid attacks. He can clear long distances based on how far you are. He's got multiple attack patterns. It's like, oh, this is closer to like an AI character than just an assist trophy that just spams an attack. Like the old Pokemon who would just come in and then like say their name and rumble around a bit while an effect happened. And if you were in the AOE for that, you took damage.
Fucking like, Abra.
Yeah. Well, the Abra looks amazing.
The Abra looks like, oh, I wish you could, because you can set what items you want, but you can't set what Pokemon you want. Just Abra.
Yeah. Oh, Pokemon Switcher could be ridiculous.
They did make the Master Ball distinction, though.
They did.
They did, but Ditto and Abra aren't legendaries.
No. Yeah, so I don't know, but I guess you could just like switch Master Ball off, so you get you're at least tilting it a little bit in your favor.
They did talk about the fact that there's now a charge for your Final Smash, which is
more like an orthodox super move in a fighting game rather than this, you know, crazy floating sphere that you've got to crack to get.
Dramatically less powerful.
Yeah, and you can't pop more than one at a time. But like, it does feel. It does feel like they spent a lot of time kind of talking about things like, now you'll be able to play in many states. Like, you can turn these off if you don't want to see
again,
them.
Though, don't you, just about how they sort of apportion the information, isn't it odd that they went to such length in the first, you know, with the E3 presentation to point that all the sort of Final Smashes have been streamlined to an extent. So it's like, you know, that none of them feel like they're just going on for too long. And then, you know, in light of this option to actually have them as just sort of being earned through a meter, that sort of emphasizing that makes a lot more sense, but they broke those two announcements up. Like, I appreciate
that everyone, so Evo just happened and everyone got real pissed off about Bayonetta again, and now you're gonna have Bayonetta, whose Final Smash takes up the amount of time that she moves around screen, and then a pre-made animation.
Yeah.
And you can just have multiple Bayonettas just keep popping that and stalling other people out of their Final Smashes because only one can go on at a time.
Yeah, I love
it. So they just made Bayonetta more fucked up.
I would assume that's one that would... Because they haven't cited that specifically like they have some others, but I would assume that's one that will get cut, you know, cut down or just changed altogether. Because that did take quite a while, and it kind of, you know, given these changes, that would seem to make sense.
What I enjoyed about that addition, though, and I know we're jumping around a little bit, but I'm imagining that with Abras and Dittos being called out, and Alucard and the Moon fucking around on the Castlevania stage while Dracula's spawning in because his conditions have happened and people are popping off Final Smashes consistently. This is, in an 8-player match, this is chaos.
Stage 8 player.
Yeah, this is fucking chaos. They have, like, they spent a lot of time talking about things that tourney players would care about during the E3 presentation. Like,
look,
but like, they really said, like, oh, by the way, you could just make this thing a fucking nightmare. Like, here you go. Here's all the ways to make, by the way.
It's a little bit apt, I guess, after we were talking about, you know, customization last week and how different Smash Brothers is from all their other stuff. And, you know, it's like, you can set whether it's an Omega form or a Battlefield form for each stage. You can have the stage change in the middle of the match to a different one.
A player going between, the Mario Kart 8 track and the Kirby Game Boy black and white stage.
Yeah, just...
Yeah, well, I was thinking, like, for the maximum difference in sort of breadth, like, Flat Zone and the Elden Bridge.
There you go. Like, there's enough components here to just build a nightmare. And that makes me incredibly excited, because... John, you've played, and Seren, you've played with me a lot of nightmares, and all of us are responsible for them. Like, every one of us here has crafted one of these.
I was responsible for introducing you guys to the Gust Bellas.
And then we turned it into an art.
Yes.
There is a combination of things that I haven't figured out yet, and that when I have the game in my hands, I will, that is going to be unplayable. Like, not like, oh, you can't play this, this is ridiculous, but I mean actually uncompletable. Just complete unplayable mess, and no one will be able to execute strategy.
So you're going to try to break the engine is pretty much what you're saying.
I'm going to try to break the players, not the engine.
Okay.
I think the engine's going to handle it. Because I think in the Sora limited offices, they're over there going like, I've got an idea.
imagining James sort of saying to Sakurai, like, Bane, not of your engine. Of your soul.
Right. Look, what if you made it mandatory coin battles? I'm just saying.
I will say that one thing that wasn't shown in or talked about in the direct but was not pixelated out was there was a menu option for custom balance.
Yes. So is that balancing the like how strong a player you are?
Like handicapping?
It says custom balance.
Okay.
Mm, intriguing. Again, just it goes to the sort of the depths of customization that Smash will do. Yes. Even we don't even exactly know what it is yet.
Yes, it's in the rule. It's in the deep rules customization screen that they were showing.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, this just shows you how deep you can go with this stuff. And some of the new kind of rule types that seem kind of interesting, like the kind of, was it the Smash Down was the one where characters kind of get eliminated?
Yeah, Iron Man mode.
That's so choice. Cool.
Yeah, like that. That's an interesting concept. Tournaments, all this kind of stuff. It's what you want to see. It's to a large extent, it's maybe what you expect to see because this is the history of Smash Bros. Like we talked about last week, it just is in a different league with Nintendo stuff when it comes to thinking about options and whatnot. But we haven't even seen everything yet. It's still impressive.
The coolest thing in this entire direct for me was the 3v3 or 5v5 mode where every single stock is a different character.
Yeah, that's neat.
It's the good thing about Smash Tour without having to play 30 minutes of a board game to get to it.
But yeah, no, I agree with that.
What if you can play an hour of a board game?
Smash Tour was like half an hour of pure suffering to get to a 3-minute match that introduces a new twist on Smash Brothers that's really fun. And now they've just said, okay, well, you can just have that without the rest
but
of Smash Tour.
Having seen the rest of Smash's history, I almost feel like they knew. They're like, man, Smash Tour is terrible. Yeah. Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's like,
But no, it's kind of like you're getting into almost like a Pokemon type situation, aren't you, in terms of having a party of fighters.
Yeah, but this makes it more like, yeah, Marvel versus Capcom or like another tag game where you're just cycling through characters. Which is real cool.
I really enjoyed how they put that direct together. And again, it's kind of a side comment, but like there was a nice flow to it. It was, as always for their directs, it was entertaining. Like they just moved from thing to thing at a decent clip. There is a certain amount of we're messing with you in there. Like they showed the dramatic reveal of the home menu, which on no other series would they ever do. Not just because they needed it, because I just finished telling you there's 900 songs and 103 stages.
Also, I mean, of all the people to be proud of their menus, right. I don't think Sakurai really qualifies.
But Sakurai
wife makes the menus.
Oh.
So he's very proud of them because his wife is the UI designer on his games.
Because they have the worst menus, and it's like, God, they're gonna dramatic reveal their menus, and then
he's married to the person.
I'm like,
who made
he's married to the menus.
Oh my god, that menu looks decent, and then it's like, but we've blurred out this part. You don't get to see that. And it's like, come on, for fuck's sake.
Unless you're watching the Japanese version, in which they missed a frame.
Yeah. So. It's like they know the menus are bad, so they dramatic reveal it, and then they also still hide part of it. It's like, this is dumb. Why would you do this?
So yes, they hid two things. One of them is successfully blurred out on every version, and one of them is that big green menu option, which in the Japanese version says spirits.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. They also hid it there. I like that the icons, people were on Twitter trying to figure out what the fuck the icons even mean, because of course this is Smash Menu, so fuck you. Mm-hmm. One of them's just a house with a Smash ball on it.
Yep.
And it's like my immediate thought, and then I had to post it because I was an idiot, was like, oh no, I said don't post it, that's too stupid, and then somebody baited me into it. Was it, it's WWE in your house. Which is which John is probably the only person here who has any recollection of that stupid.
Yeah, it's
the dumbass premise for a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
A decade later and no one's been able to define games and more to me satisfactorily.
It's games and also other stuff. I don't understand. What are you talking about? It's just everything. It's games and things that aren't games.
It's everything that's not online and Smash and spirits.
What if the menu option was nothing except games and more, and then you rolled in and it was the home menu? It's like, well, there you go. We did it. This is the menu now. It's a bad menu, I know. But, like, in this game, it's like, oh, the menu's kind of usable by humans? That's nice.
It's fascinating. So I've got a speculation question for the three of you.
Uh-huh.
So when they showed off the Rathalos from Monster Hunter...
Yes.
There was a stage.
There was.
That stage is not one of the 103 stages.
Which, by the way, they showed that menu with all the stages, and it's the stupidest fucking menu.
Yep. Yeah. But people now know all 103 stages they're talking about, and that Monster Hunter stage is not it.
Yeah, it did. I got to be honest, just it was kind of obvious. You could see it was, you know, appropriate sort of landscape for the Rathalos to be in, but it did kind of remind me of the kind of thing like when you're fighting Rayquaza in the Subspace Emissary. Like it did kind of seem like it could be that sort of thing. So how that might tie into the blurred out mode or whatever, I guess we'll see. But we do also know that it's an actual assist trophy that I guess will kind of function a bit like Ridley did on the Metroid stage for the Wii U Smash Brothers, but it could be on any stage because it's an assist trophy.
Yeah, I mean, they talked about it's a boss and an assist trophy, and I'm curious if, like, the bosses have stages built for them or if it's a real-ass stage that they're just not showing us right now. But that would be a pretty, pretty glaring oversight by them to include that stage in the trailer but not actually talk about it. If it was a regular stage, I mean, I'm not saying they couldn't have screwed that up, or maybe it did it deliberately just to cause people to talk about it.
They didn't say 103 plus stages, they said 103 stages.
Yep.
Oh, well, do you really believe that, though? Come on. Come on. Maybe it'll be DLC.
Maybe. Or maybe it'll be a stage for the boss that then becomes DLC. Like, oh, you can unlock it for the rest of the game now. I do like that they then pain to point out that if you remove the battlefield stages, it's exactly 100. And if you include all the modes, it's over 300 stages. It's like, maybe you should stop.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, we must be crazy.
Yeah, it's like...
And of course, they did slip in a totally new stage with the new Donk City Hall.
Which is a lot like the Delfino one.
Yeah, it does seem quite a bit like that. I was kind of, I would have liked it if they'd kind of, unless this is like an alternate part of it or something, like if they could have worked in the kind of nighttime celebration part of New Donk City, you know, when you actually have the festival or whatever. It seems nice enough and kind of fairly predictable, I guess, that they would go there given how popular Odyssey's been and everything, but it's nice to see.
I like that you collect the music parts though, and as you tap them, they start performing.
It's real good. There's 15 stages in Smash Brothers history that aren't in this one. And there are a couple weird omissions, like the Pac-Man stage from the 3DS game. But for the most part, it's the vertical... No vertical scrolling level came back at all.
Aww.
They just cut all of those. And they
so that's like Ice Climbers, Melee, and DK.
The DK from Brawl, the Poke Floats. And then they cut.
That's the best one.
They cut the ones that are just like duplicate stages. They just cut the clone stages. But then, yeah, there's like just one or two, like the Donkey Kong Country Returns stage from Wii U, where you got fired into the background. That's gone.
Yeah.
So yeah, just a couple weird omissions, but for the most part, the stages that are gone, it makes sense why they're gone.
Yeah, I mean, like Metroid, I guess like Metroid for 64 Smash Brothers is...
Yeah, Planet Zebes is gone.
Yeah, that's too similar to the Melee equivalent with the acid coming up and all that, you know, that sort of thing certainly makes sense.
And the Star Fox stage from 64 is basically identical to the Star Fox stage from Melee.
Right.
Because it's just on the Great Fox. It's just, you know, different. Obviously, it was just stationary in Sector Z or whatever in 64, where it was actually gave, you know, the background scrolled in Melee to give it a more dynamic feel.
Yeah, so they mostly just cut the ones that are redundant.
Yeah, to the point where I would say those are probably just the same stage. You could just go like, eh.
Yeah.
It's fine. I don't know. Then just kind of rolling through things we've included in the game. Like there's 800 songs. If you include all the menus, it's another 100. It's like, what the fuck is going on right now? Like, are you okay? Or is this like numerology code? Are you trying to tell us when the end of the world is going to be? It's like, oh, okay. 800 plus 100, 900. Eight months. You could tell us that on the ninth day of the eighth month. Oh God, that's today. Oh no. As they're just like rolling through stuff and just announcing things and just like, this is what I wanted. This is what I wanted out of a Smash game. I want things that I'm only going to ever see once that make me go, why the fuck did they include that? That's great.
I probably, and this will kind of wrap up my thoughts, my favorite thing about this whole thing wasn't even in the Direct, it was the way they announced the Direct, which is at Evo, during the Melee finals, Nintendo got up and said, we have a very special announcement, and the crowd just started shouting, like, Melee HD! And then they announced a Direct for a week later, and everyone just booed. And I'm so happy that they did that, because that's the one crowd that wasn't going to get excited about a Direct announcement, and that was their one. That's exactly
good.
Where they went.
That's the worst crowd.
Yep.
Yeah, they're going to announce Melee HD months before they're going to release the next Smash Brothers.
Well, you say that's the worst crowd. The crowd for Smash for Wii U at Evo that was just booing and booing the players for playing.
We can have just Smash crowds in general. There. We'll just do that.
I've gone over this already.
No, John, you went and talked about fucking Kirby, which wasn't even the question.
You
shat on Kirby, not the fan base. You didn't even answer the question.
I had a little bit for Smash Brothers, though, did I not?
You did.
A little bit.
John, you had a little bit of liquor in that one. I was like, are you drunk? You might be drunk, sir. How much cough syrup did you have before that episode? Were you robo-tripping?
Yeah, it was a little bit of perp. You know what I mean? Sipping that scissor.
Jesus.
What decade is this, John?
Hey, no Greg, limit, buddy. Do you have any no final limit. Thoughts on the Direct?
I enjoyed it. It would have been interesting to see how it would have felt if the Belmont thing was more of a surprise, even though, like I said, it wouldn't have been a massive left field kind of thing under any circumstances, but pretty happy with how that seems to be playing out. And it does, you have to say, you're left with the feeling of, like, bloody hell, like, a lot of the time, the modifier Ultimate is in no way to be taken literally. Like, they might actually do another iteration of this game, like, a year from now. But in this case, the kitchen sink sort of feel is, or even though there's, like, you're probably another Direct with more stuff, is already getting to such a point, you really do think, like, is there anywhere they can go after this?
what do you have left in you? Like, there's a certain amount of, like, are you just... I'm tired just going through this list. I feel like trying to get through the character... Like, they have an option in the options for, like, no, I don't want to see all the characters at one time. Please.
Yeah, collapse it a little bit for
please,
me,
please,
would you?
Please help.
An idea of where they could go next. What if they made a fighting game where one of the characters is the protagonist of Infamous, but he's good, and another character is the protagonist of Infamous, but he's bad? And then also Big Daddy is there?
Oh, fucking God. That game looks more flaccid every time they release another iteration of Smash. It's like, wow, this is depressing when you think about it now. What I would love to, like, thinking about what they could do beyond this, like, it actually is really getting to the point where the amount of content in this game is exhausting to think about. You're just like, okay, well, what if we're having, like, play day here, and I'm like, okay, it's your turn to pick the next stage. Oh God, which one of these postage stamp size stages is the one I want? Oh no. And you're
which
like,
two of these are the ones
yeah,
I want.
Because I'm making stage change, like, scrolling around trying to find Gower Plains. It's like, well, it's chronologically ordered based on when they appeared in the game first. It's like, well, fuck, Sakurai. Unlike
yeah, we didn't order it by series.
I haven't memorized when these stages were made because I wasn't there. This literally only helps you. Not even the team that made all the games, because different teams have made all these games. It helps you singularly. You are the only human being who thinks about these stages chronologically to when they were added to the series. What the fuck? But the reality of the situation is pretty much any mechanism for sorting them is not going to work. Because if you sort them alphabetically, like, who's going to be able to remember exactly the name for all 103 stages?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, is it Bridge of Eldin? I think it is. But you might think it would be Eldin Bridge or something. Right. So, yeah.
Or if you don't understand how alphabetizing works, you might look for the, which is just wrong. But, you know.
The only stage that matters starts with an E and it's Electroplankton, so.
which is there. And that one's actually relatively easy to spot, because it's, like, got those weird bulbous things, and you're good. There it is. 103 fucking stages! Like, that's a lot of shit!
75M right up front.
Yeah. Oh, and there was the one little tidbit, I think, that we hadn't mentioned, I should say, it was the notion that, like, the classic mode will be sort of a little more individual to each character in terms of what they go through.
It's awful.
Yeah, so, which is, I'm sure it's nothing, you know, in substance, it's probably a pretty similar experience with whoever you go through, but it kind of a nice touch, I thought.
I think in Brawl, it is the first time I noticed it. It was just like, oh no, just as you unlock characters, they just start showing up in this list. And it's like, well, that could really screw you depending on who you end up against.
Yep.
Well, I guess that means you might get to see characters you haven't unlocked yet.
Yeah, they haven't talked. They said they'll talk about the mechanics of unlocking characters at a later date, and they didn't address it in this direct. But they also said that you'll start with, I think, 8 characters.
Right.
And then the character unlocks will go pretty quick.
Yeah, but I mean,
but all stages are up front.
Yeah,
but I wonder if they'll just do those unlocks in chronological order, considering how much they seem to be emphasizing that.
Yeah,
you know, the sort of historical celebration of everything Smash.
Oh God! I really hope they don't make you collect music CDs.
Oh God, that was such a CD, CD, get it?
Yeah, I was like, okay, truce. Someone grab the fucking CD.
I mean, there was that whole, like, stage maker in Brawl where it's like, I'm going to make the CD farming stage. It's like, oh.
Yep. Everyone had one because they locked, like, 200 songs behind RNG drops.
Oh, you just sat there and hit the fucking sandbag forever and hoped it dropped the CD.
And then you got Excite Truck.
That's right. What if there's 20 songs from Excite Truck just on this fucking thing? I mean, they've got 900 to fill.
I mean, if they put someone from the Excite Truck franchise in.
What if it... Well, I mean... No, because there's a Snipperclip song in there.
Yes, but Excite Truck would be... That would give them like an excuse to have multiple songs.
Oh, okay.
They wouldn't have 20 unless an Excite Truck were a playable fighter.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
what if the Excite Truck were a playable fighter? You know what? I'm down with that.
That's the kind of Smash Brothers I want, and the Smash I've always wanted. Kick Mario out. He's boring. He's been in everything. Give me the bullshit.
Yep. Definitely. Steve Hewitt.
I'm here for Duck Hunt and Mr. Game & Watch and Rob more than I'm here for Luigi and Wario.
No, to be fair, like, what if Luigi's taunt is just he dies and his ghost come out and it goes back in? Like, that's
good. Taunt.
And he vacuums himself up.
And then Nintendo has to tweet every single time, Luigi is okay.
Luigi's okay. We've really undersold the fact that Luigi is now the fourth person to die in these Smash trailers for this game.
Three, but yeah.
And it's like, no, he's okay. Nobody bothered to tell us that Mario was okay.
But Nintendo UK just tweeted out, Luigi is okay. And then it became the description for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate's trending topic on Twitter, which is, Nintendo wants to reassure fans that Luigi is okay.
Oh my God. It was they fucking killed Luigi! There's something like, granted, like, you saw the tail literally pierce Mega Man in the Ridley reveal. Yeah. But
and Mario!
It was basically recreating the bit in Aliens where the Queen's tail just snaps Lance Henriksen in half.
But there's something infinitely more upsetting about Luigi's soul getting ripped out. It's like, oh, this is dire. What is happening? What a dumb fucking game Smash Brothers is.
Yeah,
like, it's really the only way to describe it. This is it's to the point where it's almost more of a toy than anything. But like, it's just this. It's like this erector set of chaos that they have put together. And it's like, well, no, if you put the engine on backwards and mount it to another engine going in the opposite direction, the whole thing will just tear itself to pieces. Not that I did that as a child. Honest. There's this weird push-pull dynamic that they're really going for in this game where they're like, look at all these things that we're doing for the people who want to play it boring. And then look at all these people who want to play it correctly. Like, you can fucking have Ditto run around and turn into your character and then just do your moves. That's great. And you're like, okay, that's awesome. That's fine. Oh, by the way, put short hops in the game.
But James, with the training stage, you can find out exactly how chaotic the items are.
The graph paper training stage.
That graph paper training stage is really cool, actually.
The parabolic arc of how far the character will fly based on that hit with the weight of the character factored in at different damage levels. It's like, what the fuck?
They showed a mid-air juggle and the lines kept updating in real time for each hit.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. It's like, well, if they had 100% damage, they would go this far. If they had 30% damage, they would go, what?
It's like, when you're in a Smash Direct and amidst all this other stuff, and it's like, oh, that reminds me of the forecasts that the Monetary Policy Committee issues here in Britain about interest rate setting. It really is quite an experience, the range of things that you'll see in a Smash Direct.
It fits largely with what Smash is. It's just like, we could go from like, look at all this music we put together, to look at this person putting their Switch in their purse and carrying it around. Like, fucking phones can't play music in the year 2018. Also, here's some graph paper, and here's Luigi getting his soul sliced out by the Grim Reaper. Have a good day, everybody. Because like, I'm watching it at work on my phone. In like a small conference room that I've sort of like grabbed for 25 or so minutes.
And that was the best way to watch it.
Well, look, I mean, I'm at work. There's a limit to what I can do. And I'm sitting here going like, every so often, I'm just like, what the fuck is happening right now? Holy shit. And then it's like, okay, now we're going to talk about the training stage. And you're like, it's like, here's graphs. It's like, we're doing like one of those VHS tapes for teaching algebra that I had to watch when I was like 10 or 12. I love it. I love everything about these directs. I honestly just want them to never release this game and keep making directs. Just keep building on top of what you've already built until such point that the game becomes unable to fit on the Switch in general, let alone on a cart.
They've said they're aiming to come in at like 15.9 gigs.
How?
Yeah, that's right. Which is big for first party.
But they don't want it on a 32 gig cartridge because of the margin change.
Sure.
So
I get that, but like,
they're going to do their best to compress 900 songs and over 70 characters.
It was
28 hours of music.
That's right, 28 hours.
Start to finish, yes. Like, they're going to try and fit all of that into 15.9 gigabytes.
What the
fuck? Bless.
So, for reference, for those of you listening at home who don't pay any attention, the average episode of RFN is like a quarter of a gig sometimes. Like, you can get up there. Like, we had one that, if we don't compress it, which we do, we compress the shit out of the audio. Like, when we used to, if we put out 128, it'd be like 300, 200 meg, somewhere in there. We put it out at 96, so it's like 86,000. There's a game in there, too.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
Stages, textures. Think about how many trophies there are going to be if there's 900 songs.
Oh my God!
Now the voices that go with that, for instance. I mean,
there's voice acting for all the characters.
Oh my God!
In all the languages.
How many trophies is this game going to have?
Probably over 1,000.
Oh my God.
The thing is, I think we actually give more bang for buck, though.
In what way?
I mean, definitely more hours of content.
I mean, there are more hours of content in this game, yes.
Isn't that just like the opposite of bang for buck? Like,
it will be amazing to see if somebody unlocks all the trophies in this game. Because the amount of time it will take is going to be staggering.
The trophies are the thing I care most about.
I think it's more just it's going to be scary how quickly somebody does it.
The thing is, like, even if it takes somebody a year, it's still going to be like, oh my God, they did it. What the fuck?
I did get absolutely everything in the two versions of Smash Brothers, the 3DS Wii U, all the challenge walls and all that stuff. It was all done eventually. It took a long time, but I got there.
Yeah, again, the trophies and the music are the things I care the most about, so...
I'm bummed no Miiverse stage, obviously, because Miiverse is dead.
What would they do, Twitter stage?
I thought they said that the Castlevania was the darkest stage of
this. There is some shit I saw on the Miiverse stage where I lost rounds because I just started laughing hysterically, because I'm like, wow, Nintendo, what the fuck?
I don't know, hentai showed up once when I was playing on it, and I was like, this is the bed I've made.
Well, I mean, there was some of the Splatfests, you'll see things where it'll be like, I didn't need to see that. All right, moving on. And then it was just like, oh, that's also now all over my Smash Brothers stage. Well, this is fine. Everything's fine.
With Splatoon, the only messages I see are either I'm gay or, like, I don't have any will to live. I'm like Judd in that way. Which is a message I have seen a couple times from a couple different people. I usually see, like, the really depressed stuff in Splatoon. I just have great luck.
I streamed one time where somebody pointed out during the chat that I missed a Miiverse post during the Splatfest that said something like, hello, squid mummies. And I was like, oh, I didn't need that. I didn't need that in my life. I'm just gonna turn off the game now and go home and go sleep. Sleep forever.
They don't make enough dating apps for squid mommies.
I didn't need... All right, well.
It's been a great podcast.
I think it's time for us to wrap up.
Been fun, guys.
Segment.
See you next week.
Smash Brothers is a game that exists. It exists in large quantities. It is a very large game. There are many, many
things
in it.
Sometimes you have to put the foot on the pedal to get this thing done. To get this thing to wrap up, you just got to go there.
Sometimes you got to drive the car off the cliff.
And now
right?
Listen to 900 songs of Smash Brothers music instead of this episode. If we come back, we'll have some new business. So stay tuned.
You sure?
I said if. We're back. I had to stop because I almost said with listener mail, because we're not. But as always, you can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I'm just addicted to saying that phrase right after the break, so I said it. It's done. We're going to do new business. I will be skipping new business this week because I have been finishing out the Mega Man X Collection Volume the First, and I'm still stuck in the anime salt mines that is... got Shining Resonance Refrain.
I saw you playing that. I was really surprised because you said you weren't going back to it.
I go in there every so often because I think I'm about to beat it, and then it's like, ha-ha! Everything's levels jumped by 10, even though you're over-leveled. So now you're way under them again. Ha-ha-ha!
That game is a good mindless game. I had a lot of fun with that.
I'm just... Mindless is a good word. I'm just ready for it to be over.
Yeah, it's 8 chapters.
Okay, I'm in the 8th chapter, so it's just like, okay, I just want you to be done.
Okay.
But, yeah, there's that. So I'm not really having anything new. I've got Octopath I'm sitting on, and we're going to talk about Octopath in a minute. And WarioWare Gold, but we'll talk about that some other time. We've already talked about it. But Greg has a brand new Switch game.
I just bought a new Switch as well. I got Iconoclasts pretty much as soon as it came out. It's funny, I've had an eye on sort of the work of this developer Joachim Sandberg or Konjac for a while, but I haven't played any of his stuff previously. So I think first time I was really exposed to his stuff was Legend of Princess, I think it is called. I think, because Johnny spoke about that on the show, I want to say, many years ago.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, which, you know, so as you might have guessed from that almost implausibly clunky title, until Code of Princess came along and topped it. It was a very, you know, Zelda-inspired, to say the least, kind of thing. Latterly, then there was the Noitu Love games.
Which Guillaume talked about, right?
Yeah, Guillaume spoke about it not that long ago. I was kind of following the saga of that, getting onto WiiWare, kind of, you know, the look, which was sort of very kind of... SNK kind of, you know, hyper sort of detailed, you know, really kind of nice pixel art kind of look to it appealed to me. The idea of using the pointer to aim kind of appealed to me, porting it from PC to WiiWare and stuff. But in the end, I haven't got around to, you know, Devolution at all. So it kind of, even though I didn't, though, I kind of kept my eye on Iconoclast. It's been, you know, came out earlier, well, at the very beginning of this year, I think, on PC and PS4 and whatnot. But there was an announcement, for the Switch version becoming, and I kind of thought, this will be the time that I got to sample one of these games, because, like I said, the visual style, especially, looking both at Devolution and then, the graphics in this case, it just really appeals to me, that kind of very, very detailed, very sort of smooth animation, but traditional pixel art is something that you don't necessarily see a lot of, because it's just not the most kind of expeditious way to produce 2D art these days. But and I guess, you know, it may be the feeling is that the extra effort only really appeals to a kind of relatively small subset of players who, you know, might really like that style because of the things they remember from the past or whatever. But in this case, rather than sort of directly kind of aping, like a 16-bit kind of style that you might see a lot in 2D games, or like, this has got like just a sort of very detailed, very colourful kind of pixel art aesthetic to it, which it reminds me a little bit of, in terms of the colour palette, of something like Metroid Fusion, in terms of that was unusually colourful for a Metroid game, presumably because of its origins, as a kind of Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance game. The screens on those things, as people who played Circle of the Moon back then know, weren't really great for distinguishing kind of the more muted color palettes that one would have associated with Super Metroid. So that was not as garish as the sort of like Harmony of Dissonance, but it was, quite colourful, for a Metroid game. And, in this case, Iconoclast is very, very colourful. It's very strong use of yellow in particular. The primary character is a blonde sort of character. There's always that, but just in the sort of the landscape and all this kind of stuff, that comes through really nicely. And it just, on the Switch, I again played it all portably, so I can only really speak to this, from a portable mode point of view, but it just looks super crisp and really nice, when you're playing in portable mode. And as you'd expect, I didn't notice any particular kind of performance issues or anything like that. But in terms of the nature of the game, it is in the Metroid vein, but it's a little bit different. I mean, it's certainly not as sprawling or extensive as Hollow Knight, which I spoke about a bit ago. It is closer in scale to something like Samus Returns, perhaps, but still pretty extensive for a game of that type, because sometimes they are, really quite brief. I've seen the credits and all that, but I kind of saw them with about sort of half the item completion, and I've ticked up a little bit to kind of 2/3 now, but there's still a fair bit, I guess, to find in that respect. But that takes around took me about 10-ish hours to see the credits, which is, kind of on the longer side compared to, a fair amount of these games, but not as extreme as something like Hollow Knight, certainly. But I guess in some ways, even though it's 2D, I think there's an emphasis on puzzle solving here that kind of reminds me more of Metroid Prime than it does, a classic side-scrolling Metroid, because, the Prime games really did make that, in a number of ways, it kind of took Metroid a little bit more in the Zelda direction, and there's a fair amount of that here in terms of, kind of having to solve, kind of machinery kind of puzzles and all this kind of stuff. There's some nice iteration on concepts and, gradually making it more complex to get stuff, using explosives and, various kind of weapons and changing the environments, and ultimately kind of much of the game revolves around you sort of cranking things with this wrench that you've got as your kind of primary, well, your melee weapon certainly, and then this projectile weapons that get upgraded. So, there's a little bit of 2D Metroid to it, I guess, a little bit of Metroid Prime to it, and then also, I guess, you could even say a little bit of Other M to it, because there's a sort of an auto-aim component to your stun gun that you use, where, say, for instance, if you were kind of aiming at an enemy that's above you, and it's not directly above you, but you're kind of aiming directly above you, it will adjust slightly to kind of hit that enemy if it's kind of in the vicinity. So which, like I said, reminds me of Other M, because that had to deal with the fact that you were controlling a 3D game with a D-pad. So naturally, you kind of, when you weren't shooting missiles with the pointer, you know, there was a lot of auto aim involved there, just a little bit here. On top of the puzzle solving components, you've then got the kind of, the pretty strong action component to it, which is kind of what I would expect based on, you know, the reputation of stuff like Naito Love and its sequel, Devolution. Yeah, there's some really cool bosses from a visual point of view. The pixel art, again, you know, with these really giant sort of multi-segmented scaling and rotating and all this kind of stuff. I love that kind of thing. Incorporating that kind of puzzle design into these fights as well. It's not just like kind of all out action in a lot of cases. It's, you have to, you know, figure out how to kind of expose a weakness or something, but not usually in a way that's quite as sort of formulaic as you might see even in, you know, like some Prime games where it's, you know, the rule of three and all that good stuff that we're very familiar with as Nintendo players. It's a nice balance in that respect of kind of, yeah, I mean, I'm playing it on the standard mode, which was like the middle choice in terms of difficulty. It felt like a nice balance of, you know, it has some challenge in terms of action, but not being hugely leveraged on that. You know, it's somewhat generous in that respect. It's not about being, you know, really amazing kind of Twitch action game player, but yeah, leveraging the puzzle aspects and all that kind of thing. So it's fairly forgiving. I mean, it might be interesting to see how some of the fights feel on a different difficulty level, where, you know, I feel like I could kind of bungle my way through on the action front a little bit, that'll have to wait for another time. Lots to like here, I guess. And the last thing, the last strand of it I'll mention is the story, which is quite prevalent, you know, quite prominent, I should say, in terms of the presence of it. There's a big, you know, it's a pretty big dialogue component, even though your character's mostly silent. That is somewhat explained, I guess, more so than is usually the case for sort of silent protagonists in video games. But you do have some dialogue choices to make, so I guess that's the extent to which your primary character speaks. But plenty of the other characters have got a lot to say. Much of it, I feel like, is trying to achieve world building. There's, you know, fairly kind of, it's its own kind of universe. They're trying to cut, you've got different kind of factions and lore and stuff to kind of, get to the player with the script. So a lot of that's done, you know, with character conversations rather than like finding logs or something, you know, like the way you would do in a Metroid game, perhaps. It's at times it can feel a little bit kind of odd in this kind of game to slow it down to the extent that it does with text. I guess, you know, that you could, you know, make another comparison to Metroid Fusion in that sense, although it's, you know, generally not kind of limiting what you can do the way that, you know, Fusion kind of leads you by the hand. So, although if you go to the map, it's usually got sort of gives you a, you know, a prod about what you're supposed to be doing if for some reason you kind of lost the thread of it, if you didn't play it in as kind of concentrated period of time as I did. But there's a lot of emphasis around this kind of, the core concept of this like ivory in the game, which is, I guess, analogous to the spice in the Dune world, except it kind of reminds me of the white tree sap from the Tree of Life. I'm mixing that up with the Aronofsky film with Hugh Jackman in it. If anybody remembers that, Tree of Life is a totally different thing. But anyway, it's kind of interesting. The Fountain, yeah, that's the one. It's kind of a interesting thing to have depicted in a, pixel art video game in that sense. And a number of the sort of concepts in it and all that are quite sort of convoluted and all this kind of stuff. I'm not sure it really fully connected with me, like the world and the story and all that, but, I kind of appreciated it was there to some extent to kind of, give more of a sense of this kind of strange, this other world, even though, I didn't kind of fully kind of think, connect with every aspect of it. It still sort of gave a sense of place, which is quite nice to have. There are some interesting moments storytelling wise, certainly much more beyond, the kind of boilerplate stuff that you might be used to in games of this type. It is effective at times. It's just not sometimes, you might kind of feel like it's maybe belaboring the point in certain areas, or in other areas you kind of feel like you're not exactly sure what it's going on about. So always a tough kind of balance to strike. I mean, to some extent it kind of has the hallmarks of something, not surprisingly, given how much, this is the product of one person, I guess. It's like, them pouring themselves into it. And then there's always a little bit of sort of question of how much of that really comes across to the audience, but certainly enough, I think, to be fairly effective. And it doesn't get in the way of the game. Very sound mechanics enough to be a real problem. So probably overall like a net positive, the narrative components, but not unambiguously so, I'd say. It may depend on your kind of appetite for that sort of stuff, but overall very enjoyable. Great to see, something this gorgeous in pixel art coming out now. I guess the most obvious kind of thing alongside this would be like Owlboy on Switch. It's got a reputation for being absolutely gorgeous. I've yet to play that on Switch, so I'm not seeing kind of how it stacks up in that regard. But in terms of from a gameplay standpoint, also very very satisfying. I think the one kind of interesting and perhaps somewhat kind of I'm a little bit kind of ambiguous about component of the game is this sort of tweaks sort of system that it has. So it's always a problem with this kind of game in terms of, you think of something like Axie Infinity, we had a whole bunch of different guns and it's like, well, I don't really need them. But it's like, well, at least they're sort of different guns and they play differently. It's like a fun little thing, even if you don't particularly need it, versus like, well, more missiles and more health is, it's sort of useful, but it doesn't change the experience kind of.
Right. It's just more.
Iconoclast has a kind of this tweak system where it's like you were in the case of like optional chests and stuff, you will get kind of materials, and these materials are used to craft these sort of perks for your character, essentially. If you've had already found the blueprints to actually build these perks that you can then equip, and they kind of function a little bit like cave story style in terms of, you beat enemies and it kind of fills up a meter. And this meter kind of activates these perks that you've got equipped like in order. But if you get hit, the meter drains and so your perks may go away. So you've got some sort of strategy about, okay, which ones do I want to put in what order and all this kind of stuff. But the thing is, it's just, they don't seem very crucial or even sort of pertinent to the core gameplay at all. I mean, some are sort of more fundamental than others, like you can increase your foot speed for the character, or you can have, I guess, the most substantial one arguably would be creating a dodge roll. But especially because, in the middle of a fight you get sort of, hurt and you might lose them for a time or whatever. It just, they feel very kind of superfluous in this setting and doesn't provide a great incentive to go and collect stuff. Like I said, it's a problem with a lot of these types of games ultimately. Like, you have a certain amount of critical kind of items to advance in the story, that actually truly enhance your character in terms of what it can do and surmounting obstacles and new kinds of gameplay. And then you have this kind of extra stuff. And there's different ways of doing it with, you know, like I said, missiles or the guns in Axe Invasion. Here is a little bit different again. But I just don't, I don't know whether it's a function of the actual, you know, not sort of wanting to kind of make it feel like they're mandatory because they're not, or that would have been maybe more challenging than was intended, but it just, they just ultimately feel like fairly kind of incidental pickups. And the real thing is, and I've said this about stuff like Zero Mission, is just, you know, you play them to just achieve the objective, you know, to just solve that puzzle rather than, oh, this is going to help me so much afterwards or anything like that. So, you know, a little bit kind of, I'm not entirely successful, I think, that kind of implementation, but you still, the most important thing is, like I said, the fundamentals in acquiring these items, and that generally is really well judged, I think. So, definitely very enjoyable for me. I know for me, Zach as well liked it a lot, who reviewed it for us. So, yeah, I think, well worth checking out if you're a fan of sort of this style of game and also this aesthetic.
Cool. That came out, was it last week?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Seren, you have the game that we've been hearing like, hey, why haven't you guys talked about this game yet?
I have an answer. It ain't great.
Well, that's the reason I haven't talked about it. I just haven't had a chance to play it. You have completed and have thoughts.
This is not
very
true.
You have played a lot of then.
Yes.
And very much have thoughts on Octopath Traveler.
I do.
Would you care to share those thoughts, or are you going to keep us in suspense?
Okay.
Blazing hot take incoming.
I've been letting this build for days. I've been telling people that I can't talk about my feelings because I need to
look,
make
this
sure
isn't, this
I get
isn't meant to be therapy, okay?
I have played
RFN
33...
is supposed to make you need therapy, not be therapy.
I have played 33 hours of Octopath Traveler.
Okay.
I have not had fun for the last 29 of those 33 hours.
That sounds like better than a work week.
This fucking game. Okay. So let's start at the beginning and say what it is before I talk about my feelings about it.
Okay.
Octopath Traveler is a JRPG not made by the Bravely Default team. It is made by Acquire. This team has made games like Occubus Trip.
It's a kind of irony to it, isn't there? Because the Bravely Default team, Silicon Studio... Mm-hmm. Right, and you know they also made 3D Dot Game Heroes.
Yes,
which this game's aesthetic kind of seems like a fusion. You know, Octopath's aesthetic looks like a fusion of 3D Dot Game Heroes and a 16-bit RPG.
Yep,
but Silicon Studio are not involved.
No, they're not. They are busy. They're running a Bravely Default mobile game in Japan. They are reevaluating some of their mobile game development, and they are teasing on Twitter that, hey, maybe we're making a Bravely third, who knows?
Yeah, like, they're being, like, deliberately not subtle, but also not committing to anything. It's the worst.
Yes. It's like, I don't know, congratulations to Octopath for doing so well. Oh, what's this fairy doing here?
They're teasing it like they're about to announce something tomorrow. But they're not. It's the worst.
So Octopath is being made by Acquire, the studio that worked on games like Occubus Trip and Occubus Beat.
So classics. Brody Bro Bro, Bro Ham Steam. Yeah.
Yes. So this is the game that used to be called Project Octopath Traveler. You probably saw it at the Switch presentation in January 2017 when everyone was like, whoa, what's this art style? And then they called it HD 2D and everyone hated them.
No, that was before we had HD Rumble, so to be fair. many bad phrases were coined during that event.
So, this game is an I don't want to use that word because that's incorrect. It is a collection of 8 short stories with 8 different protagonists. So the 8 letters of Octopath each have a character that starts with a letter. So there's Ophelia, there's Cyrus, Therian, Ulbric, Primrose, Alphine, Tressa, and I mixed up Tressa and Therian, I think, and Hanit, which I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's H'AANIT. So
that's the one that talks like bad Shakespearean Old English, right?
So, side note about that. Yeah, all the characters speak in the English localization. All the characters and towns are written with different styles. So, like, one of them is pretty modern. One of them is like Lord of the Rings. And then, yeah, Hanit's is straight up old English, old with an E. And it is clear that the people who translated, localized, and edited, wrote the English script and edited it, knew exactly what they were doing. They got all the old English correct and then passed none of that on to the voice actors.
Oh, no.
So the old actors are really struggling to read old English correctly, but the old English is written correctly, so there's that. So yeah, it's, so you pick a character. The game doesn't tell you this, but the character you pick can never ever be taken out of your party under any circumstances. The game does not tell you that until you get your 5th party member. At this point, you're like 9 hours into the game. So I started with Primrose, who's a stat buff character, because I wanted to get her story out of the way. But nope. Nope, now I'm fucking stuck with a stat buff.
You can never get out of the way.
Never, ever.
So basically, the character you pick turns into what? Like the main character of the overarching plot?
They call
plot?
It the protagonist, except there isn't an overarching plot, and we'll get there. So they call it the protagonist, but they're outside of the inability to remove them from your party, nothing else changes at all. Period. They don't get any story differences. There's no writing differences. The only difference is they can never be taken out of your party.
So they're super important.
Yeah, because they're the protagonist. So anyways, I choose Primrose, who is a woman from royalty, or nobility, not royalty, who had her father assassinated in front of her eyes as a child, and she became a sex worker to stake out a brothel where one of the 3 people who killed her father is rumored to be working. Rumored to visit. So that's where her story starts. Not all of them start that dark. By the way, this game is rated T, and there's a lot of swearing that I'm not even sure the ESRB noticed because it's not in their rating summary. But like Tressa, wants to go see the world. She's a merchant, and her town gets ransacked by pirates, and she is upset because they don't correctly value the things they're stealing. But she has a merchant's eye, so she can look at something and know what's valuable and what's not. There's Ulbric, who is looking for... They're all looking for something slightly different. So Ulbric is on his quest because he was a knight, his liege died, and he's investigating years later. Ophelia is going through a religious rite, where she's taking a sacred flame to multiple different cities. And so, like, this is, like, the structure of these short stories. All these stories are 4 chapters long. And so, for example, Primrose is chapter 1, ends with her escaping from the brothel. Her chapter 2 is the first of the 3 people. You can see where this goes. They're all structured like this, where by the time you've completed chapter 2, you know what chapter 3 and chapter 4 are going to be. However, you cannot just go do chapters 2, 3, and 4, because the game scales difficulty ridiculously unfairly. So you complete chapter 1. So the game opens really, really smart, actually. So there are 8 characters. There are 2 offense, like two tank characters, two magic users, two stat characters, and two other characters. And all of them are opposite of each other on the map. It all starts in a big circle. So, and everyone's chapter two, so your first character's chapter two is always going to be on the exact opposite end of the map from when they started. So to get to your chapter two, you have to have walked around and collected three other party members, so by the time you get there, you're guaranteed to have one of each type, which is really smart.
Right.
So, your first... You start, and you're like, okay, the second character you pick up, their recommended level is level 5. And you look up at your first character's chapter 2, and you're like, huh, it says level 20. That's far away. So by the time I've collected all 8 party members, by the way, you can only have 4 at a time, and your protagonist cannot ever leave the party, some of your characters might be ready for a level 2, or a chapter 2. But not all of them, and characters don't gain experience unless they're in the party. And there's 8 characters, and you can't fully change out your party, so you're leveling up your core party of 4, then you swap 3 in with keeping your protagonist, and then you swap 1 in to get them up to their point, because like Alfine needs to be present for Alfine's Chapter 2. So you can't just keep your core party of 4 people that you like and then just progress through the game. You need to be constantly rotating party members out who are always underleveled. Meanwhile, the levels just keep raising and raising and raising and raising to the point where you are constantly, like, to get... And sometimes it's even more fucked up than that because there's, not Primrose. Alfine. I think it is Alfine. Alfine's, Chapter 2... had a recommended level for me of level 22. I got everyone in the party, including Alfine, up to at least level 24 before I even made my way to the town. I walk there, and the area that you have to walk through to arrive at his town has a recommended level of 29. And I walked into one fight and got one hit killed by everyone. But, like, everyone just... We got taken by surprise, and they had an area of attack, area of effect attack that dealt 3,000 damage to everyone. And my party just wiped immediately. And that's fun. And this is this fucking game. There is a way to circumvent the grind. Primrose, I didn't know this when I selected her, has an ability called Bewildering Grace that causes a random thing to happen.
When you say a random thing, what do you mean?
Yeah,
I mean...
The game resets?
No. So there is a large list of things that can happen, about 50% good, 50% detrimental.
Okay.
Good things include your party's HP is fully restored. You get more BP, which is part of the combat system that I'll get to. Etc. But the bad things are like, well, you can't use items for the rest of the battle. Everyone in your party now has 1 HP. Everyone is poisoned for 9 turns. So, you know, very dangerous to be using. So, there is, I think, a 0.05% chance that one of the things that can happen is EXP times 100.
Whoa!
Which circumvents the grind for the 4 people currently in your party for the next couple hours. It literally saves you a couple hours of gameplay if that pops. So I saw someone on Twitter say that they got it, and they showed a before and after of the save file, and everyone in their party went from level 27 to 35.
That's pretty good.
And I asked them what the circumstances were, and they said, oh, I spent 8 hours grinding out Bewildering Grace, hoping that it would pop.
Oh, so they saved lots of time, what you're telling me.
It's fucking ridiculous. And of course, that only is for the 4 members of your party. There are 4 people who, at all times who are not in your party. Who are not gaining that experience. But, so yeah, you cannot, the game is not designed for you to go like Primrose 1, Primrose 2, Primrose 3, Primrose 4. The game pushes extremely hard against that. It's meant to be all chapter 1s, all chapter 2s, all chapter 3s, all chapter 4s. couple problems with that include the level requirements, so you're grinding up every single character before you go to their next chapter because they haven't been in your party since their last chapter, if they're not one of your mains. Some of the stories fucking suck. Like, some of the stories are legitimately interesting. I'd say three of them are really interesting, two of them okay, and three of them suck.
Okay.
And, oh boy, the economy is real rough and weird. If you don't have Tressa in your party, who's the merchant who has a skill that gives you a 300% gold increase, you're not accruing gold at a fast enough rate to keep everyone in your party equipped satisfactorily. So she's important, except she's not that useful of a character in combat. So, okay. But then I also have Primrose, who's also not that useful a character in combat, so now I'm fucked and can only have two slots left. And I'm trying to get people's experience up so that they can go to their chapters. These are the things I'm constantly thinking about while I'm playing. It's extremely stressful, and I want to see this thing through because I feel like I just need to know, because I've done everyone's chapters 1 and 2s, and I've done 2 chapter 3s. That said, I have heard from multiple people who have played the game, including people who have liked it and people who have disliked it, so they've all said this is correct. So there are 36 main chapters, 8 times 4.
Yep.
35 of them are the exact same in terms of structure. There's one chapter in the entire game that is different. The structure is, with the exception of the chapter 1s where there's an optional prologue where you get to know the characters, that excluding that, you talk to people in town, you use your character's path action, which is different per character, like one character steals an item, one character asks questions of people in the town, one character seduces a character in the town. You use your path action, you fight, you have a conversation, you go into a dungeon, which is a completely straight hallway with a couple branching paths that just have a treasure chest at the end of them. Other than that, it's just a complete straight path. Very linear.
How long do the dungeons usually run?
Do you mean to grind up to the point where you're ready for the boss, or to walk to the end?
Like, time in dungeon.
Couple hours, because you're grinding.
Okay.
If you walk from the entrance to the exit, 40 seconds.
Okay.
Uh-huh. You get there, you fight the boss. The bosses, if you beat them and are appropriately leveled, take 30 to 40 minutes. That is as designed. And if you die, you restart.
Oh god, I don't want to think about how long the last one must be.
That's fucking by design, too. That is intentional. I came into a fight 5 levels over-leveled, and I finished at 35 minutes.
Oh, man.
And I knew all of their weaknesses because I looked it up first. I was exploiting all their weaknesses. I never took a... Like, I had them staggered the whole time. I wasn't taking hits.
God, it's like a Bravely Default fight.
Uh-huh. It's almost like the producers are the same, and maybe they're the ones that had all the bad ideas. It's insufferable. It's so frustrating. Like, everything in this game is like, I should like this, but I don't, because there's 5 things stacked against it at every moment. But yeah, 35 of those chapters are just, yeah, the dungeon, and then the boss fight, and then just enough story to get you to the next area. Also, because the game knows it's going to be 10 to 15 hours between Primrose's chapter 2 and Primrose's chapter 3, every time you start a chapter, it's like, previously on, because they know it's been so goddamn long. And you're juggling 8 stories constantly. So, okay, you have those issues, and then there's the fucking art style. So, the art style is the most striking thing, and I can honestly say I am fucking sick of it.
Really?
So, first of all, it is... In motion, in the final version, it is like a college freshman got access to Adobe After Effects and turned all the filters up. Everything is blurred. There are particle effects on everything. Just giant brightness flashes, god rays where it doesn't make sense. There are times where you're in dungeons, in forests, where the critical path is blurred out. Why?
Neat.
Yeah, that's interesting, because didn't they, when they talked about taking the demo feedback into account, like talk about fixing things like that?
Yeah. So one of the demo feedback things that they fixed was that you had to hold the button to run, and because by default you were just walking and it was insufferably slow. Well, guess what? Now you can run on by default, except the areas outside of the demo area are so overly large that it still feels like you're going too slow. So, like, I don't know what they were doing. There's so many questions I have for this development team about how they came to decisions they made. But one of the visual effects also, and this just bothers me more than it should, I took a screenshot. And I'm not this kind of person. I'm never this Digital Foundry kind of person. But it was so distracting that I just took a screenshot and I counted. And on a single screenshot at a beach, there were, in terms of like how big a pixel was, there were 9 different sizes on display. The art style is so inconsistent. And that's not like it's closer to the screen, it's further away. Like, on a tree, on a vertical tree, there were 3 different pixel sizes. It's just so inconsistent. It's like different artists just handled different parts and just stitched them all together. And you're on that same beach, like the sand is just has a disco ball effect where just random pixels are just flashing bright white constantly. And while a cutscene is going on and you're trying to look up at the top of the screen to read the text, but your eyes are just constantly getting pulled to the bottom of the screen where it's flashing. Like, so the art style is just distracting and overdone, and the structure of the game is repetitive and not conducive to continued play, and the battle system is interesting. They took the Shin Megami Tensei battle system and copied it, which I'm not complaining about, because I love the Megami Tensei combat system, where each enemy has a specific list of weaknesses, and if you hit them with weaknesses, you can topple them and gain extra turns.
So far you're describing A plus 10 out of 10.
Yeah, the issue with the combat system also is that they use boss fights to introduce one-off mechanics, which is normally okay in a video game, especially an RPG. It is less okay when those boss fights are 35 minutes long.
Right, because that first time you get burned on, it sucks.
And 10 minutes in, the boss just, you realize that every time you topple the boss, it keeps getting stronger and stronger, so you shouldn't have been toppling it. Time to restart. This game, I will say the music is really good. Like, playing, like, there are smart things. I really like the job system it has. The job system is really well done, and the fact that you can get a second job, so you can, I can take a character like Primrose that I feel like I just got stuck with, and I can give her all the abilities from another party member so that I can have her be both a support character and also a black mage.
So does that affect their field skills as well? No. The term's not field skill. I just can't remember what term they use for it. No, okay.
It does not. It affects their outfit, and it affects their passive abilities. Because every character can have 4 passive abilities equipped, and there are, you get four, you learn 4 for each class. So, like, you can give them different classes and then give them different passive abilities until you have the passive configuration you want for each character. But, and, like, the different combinations are very interesting, but the game is so aggressive with its difficulty spikes that it's very hard to find a safe place where you can experiment with what you like and don't like. Because, first of all, your some character is always going to be underleveled unless you are spending so much time in every area that you're suffering. And you're just constantly cycling everyone in for every single new area you get to. And just like, okay, here's a town. And then the area next to it is recommended level 22. And then the very next area is 29. The very next area is 35. The very next area is 40. Like, and you're not leveling up that fast. So it feels like you're either going back to an old area where you're wiping everyone out so you can't tell if your new characters or your new battle strategies work well, or you're immediately throwing yourself into the deep end with enemies that were giving you trouble before. Also not fun is that in random encounters, sometimes you'll just get a super strong enemy in your random encounter. One that's like three times as difficult as all the other enemies in that area. Just cause.
Do you know right away?
No.
Like, oh shit, oh, this is,
yeah,
this is
you,
bad
you
news.
See it when you enter the battle, but it's a random encounter, so you don't know before the battle. But okay. Actually, no, because artistically it's not different. You know once you've fought them once before.
Oh, okay.
So, like, the very first time you are in an area and all the enemies are new, you might not... Sometimes it's pretty clear, but, like, because it'll be, like, guard, and then, like, guard captain. But then, but usually when it's just, like, monsters, and it's, like, three different types of monsters, you're not going to be able to identify, that's the really hard one, I should run away.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know. This game is... I feel compelled to finish it for some reason. I guess a similar reason to why...
Yeah, it's not a particularly apparent reason based on everything you've been saying.
Like, I feel like it's kind of the same reason that I ended up finishing Xenoblade Chronicles X. I will say, I had a way better time with Xenoblade... Oh, sorry, not X2. I've been having a way better time with Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I had a way better time than Octopath. I had a lot of problems with XC2, as James knows. I've talked to him about that game a lot. Way more willing to go back to XC2 than Octopath. But I feel like maybe the most indicative thing is that I was playing two JRPGs at the same time. Octopath and erotic RPG that like Jesus. is extremely tenuous. It's like I was just playing because the writing is hilarious and stupid, and I was more interested in the tacked on RPG elements in that than going back to playing more Octopath because it felt more balanced. Maybe that's the most damning thing I can say.
And you're less balanced.
Boom, got him.
It's. Oh my god. It's really frustrating and like...
John, I want you to know I appreciated that sick burn.
I'm not commenting on it because I'm trying to get away. Like, that was not meant to be me talking about that game. But...
Well, you know, it's funny because I was hyped for this game originally.
Yeah.
But when I played the demo, I played Ulbrich's story and I thought that it was... I mean, I talked about this before, but... I just thought it was so cliche. I mean,
Ulbrich is one of the three that I think is just a straight up bad story.
Like I was like, holy crap! Like I can't believe that they actually. It was one of those stories that I thought was so bad that I couldn't believe people actually sat down and wrote it. Like this was an original. Like wow, this is really good. Let's put this in the game. Like are you kidding? It's the most.
Yeah, there are three stories that are just fucking bad.
Yeah.
And I will comment on the other thing that. Drew initial concern from people, although of all the things I've just talked about, this is not a thing that is really a big issue for me. I'll complain, but like it's on a whole much lower tier. People were commenting on the revelation right before the game came out that the your party members don't acknowledge each other at all. Like, you go around, you have your four people in your party, but you are only ever doing one character's story. And it's like, you get these weird moments where, like, a character gets pulled into a room and is like, oh, thank God, it's just the two of us. And then you enter a battle and there's four party members. but the only character interactions come from optional side banter, where, like, a cutscene will play out in the story, like, Ophelia and Primra, like, Ophelia's story will happen, and she was getting, like, harassed by a man, and then it'll at the end of the cutscene, in the upper right corner, it'll say, press plus for travel banter, and you hit the plus button.
Oh, that's some Tales of shit right there.
Yep, and then Ophelia and Primrose will talk for about 20 lines about that cutscene. About, like, because Primrose has all sorts of experience with drunk men. And Ophelia was born and raised, or not right, born, was raised from an orphan in a church by, like, a cleric. So, like, she's super unfamiliar with that. And you get weird moments, like, conversations that happen that feel like they would have complete game-changing ramifications that are never addressed ever again. Because you can only get the travel banter if your party configuration is exactly correct at the end of a very specific cutscene. So the game can't bank on you ever seeing any of them. So none of them have any ties to anything later. But, like, I straight up got a scene where Ophelia, who is this cleric girl, like this very demure girl, basically confesses to Primrose that she wants to go on a date with Primrose. And then Primrose is like, huh, I'll think about it when this is all over. And then that's never addressed again. Fuck it. Game can't assume you've seen it.
So there is sort of like an end story, though, right?
Is this
hidden optional thing or
yes.
something?
So, once you complete all 36 chapters, if you complete certain unmarked side quests in a correct order, and then visit a dungeon, I believe, with the correct item, you can get to the ending that has, like, a final boss and credits. But the game doesn't tell you about literally any of that, and Nintendo also didn't, and Square Enix didn't tell reviewers about any of that. So, for most people, the game is done when you clear 36 chapters, and then the credits don't even roll, apparently. Like, there isn't a final boss unless you know the fucking secret to get to it. This isn't like Bravely Default, where, like, there is a thing that the game hints at. Apparently the game just doesn't tell you shit.
Why would you? I mean, it sounds perfectly clear to me. Just do the impossible. Do the thing.
They just fucking buried the ending of their game, where everything theoretically comes together. But, like, there are a couple small, like, references to each different character stories and, like, the other characters, but it's mostly just, like, oh, a character, like, two characters, chapter twos, took place in the same town, and, like, I see a character that was involved in this character, chapter two, like, walking around in a shop in the background. But, like, I have not seen, like, any villain through line so far. I have not seen, like, any, like, there has been no world need to save the world peril introduced in the first 30-ish hours of this game.
So, like, do you think that optional chapter end is just going to be like, oh, here's the bad guy?
Maybe.
Blah.
That's what I expect, given how poor the storytelling has been thus far.
Neat.
But, like, 30-ish hours in, Tressa still just wants to go see the world. She's got no bigger objective.
That's a good reason to get out there, though.
Yeah, she's fine. Like, I don't know. Hane is the character, if people are listening this far and still want to fucking play, since you can't get rid of a character, the character that you pick, you might be like agonizing over who to pick. Pick Hanet, because she's the most broken, overpowered, most fun character in the entire game by far. It's not even close. So she's a tank character that can use half the melee items before she even gets a second job. And her field action is Pokemon. She goes into she can go into battles with enemies and catch them, and it shows the percentage success rate, and then she just has them to use as attacks.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And her offensive stats are off the charts, and then if you give her the second class that has high defense, she's practically immortal.
That's also pretty good.
It's
I'm okay
not
with all
even
that.
Close. It's like all the other characters have pros and cons for picking them first. Well, a couple of them only have cons. Hanet really doesn't have any cons for picking her first. It's just like, oh, this is kind of the one, huh? And anyways, I fucking chose Primrose.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of these issues, although I understand they frustrated you, like, are imminently solvable with just, like, one decision made differently.
Yeah, it's just a lot of one-off top-level decisions. Like, game runs at a great frame rate, like, I haven't encountered any bugs. Like, the game cohesively seems well made by the actual development team. I feel like it's just a lot of really wrong decisions were made by the creative team, and it's... Oh, it's so frustrating because I'm playing this game and I'm just thinking of what could have been.
What has been, though, is in a really kind of shockingly successful game in terms of sales.
Oh, yeah, no, this game came out at a great window. It was promoted really well. It has an excellent... it has an easy sales pitch. The visuals are striking. Like, the music is really good. Like, I can see... Like, and a trailer for this game works really well, always. Like, I can see why this game does as well as it does. I just feel... And, like, I was super excited about this game. And then reviews came out, and I was a little anxious about it, but I was like, F it, I'm all in. I want to see this thing. I love RPGs. I like the games that they're quoting as inspiration. And then I played it, and for the first 4 hours, I was loving it. And then, like I said, I haven't had fun since Hour 4.
I'm curious, because there will be a follow-up to this game, based on how it sold.
Probably not a sequel, but a follow-up, yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious what lessons they learned from this. Because, like, I'm still in a place where I feel like I need to see it. I need to know. Even if I feel like the things you said kind of reinforce what I was worried about. Like, it's at that point now where it's, like, it's almost so in that space of, like, wow, this is what I was scared of, that I almost need to see it now.
So, maybe this is an awful note to close out on. Maybe it's the best note to close out on. I don't know. So, you know how awful, or not awful, how abusive Atlus DLC with their RPGs can get?
Yeah.
So, they said for Octopath, before the game came out, like, we're only going to patch for bug fixes. There's going to be no DLC of the game we ship is the game we ship.
Right.
Honestly, I would pay $2 for a bonus dungeon I could warp to and just grind out items that give me free levels and just skip the grinding. I would pay $2.
Oh,
I'm not
above
that.
Them that. Don't tell them that.
No, I will tell them that. I'm not above it. That would make this game better.
Radio
Free Center
does not endorse this position.
I'll pay $62 to get a better game than a game I pay $60 for.
Sure, but that's just a less abusive game.
Yes. I will take a less abusive game.
Octopath Traveler has stopped punching me in the face, therefore it is now better.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Look, we all know that James Jones is paid to win. We've established that long ago.
No,
I pay $2 for this thing to stop kicking me in the stomach every time I remember... Oh, fuck, Tressa's 15 levels below, isn't she?
I'm win to pay, John. All right, well, we need to move.
I need to move out of the county at this point, but...
it's I'm not touching that.
Yeah.
At some point, I suspect we'll be back here talking about this game because I need to know. Maybe not right away now. Maybe there's other things to take care of first. John.
All right. Okay, so I did pick up, I haven't played a whole lot of it, but I did pick up, purely out of curiosity, kind of took a flyer on it, Dead Cells, which has gotten some good reviews. It is a roguelike Metroidvania, or probably some combination of those words, like roguelikevania, that people would like to use.
Roguevania.
Yeah, you know how those things go. Yeah.
And the kids with their made-up words.
Yep. And so this was released actually on Steam in Early Access about a year ago. So they've been kind of working on it, taking feedback and all that stuff, and they finally released it on PS4, Xbox One. Switch is out, I believe. Switch also released, I think, on yesterday.
Yep.
So it's cool so far. I like it a lot. Has a very, very good art style. You know, you start off, you are this character called the Prisoner, and of course it's the typical Metroid type of platformer, Super Metroid-ish, and it is all, each time you die, they say it's kind of like a Dark Souls sort of thing, but what isn't these days?
No.
What isn't these days?
No!
Yep.
It's like Dark Souls me, John.
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, they say that the enemies are difficult and, you know, kind of unflinching, and you just have to learn the enemies or you get your butt kicked. But I haven't played enough to really come across that. There are bosses. I think there's four major bosses. But anyways, what happens is when you die, instead of respawning, the entire area that you're in is randomly generated. So it regenerates when you die. And so it's always a new area to traverse through if you get killed. So the idea is, don't get killed.
It's a good thought.
Yep. And so you, along the way, you pick up, you know, different swords, and you have like several different slots that you can put, you know, different things in. There's, you can pick up traps, and you can pick up sword, pick up a bow and arrow, and they all have different kind of slots that correspond to several different colors, and you can get upgrades for those colored slots. Like, I think there's red, purple, and green. And you can get level ups that correspond to those. And there's a lot of like kind of puzzle solving. You know, you have to find out how to open a door up here. So you have to kind of go down a little bit and you know, kill some enemy or hit some lever or something like that. So far I'm really, really early on. But it's looking good so far. The game looks great. Has the kind of like this sort of pixelated art style. Your character is this headless guy who gets, kind of possessed by these cells. And the cells,
are they dead?
I guess they don't seem very dead. They crawl into your character and bring him back to life. So I don't really know where that's coming from. But the cells, they're also, you also pick up other cells as currency. And I guess you have to find a vendor, and that's how you can buy upgrades that you then keep permanently. And so you then keep those upgrades the next time, you know, when you finally do die. You then keep those upgrades for your next playthrough, hence the kind of roguelike sort of aspect to the game. So,
yeah, it's something like Rogue Legacy in play here.
Yep. Well, and that's the thing. I haven't really played many roguelike games. It's not really a genre that I really mess around with very much. I have played Binding of Isaac, which I guess is roguelike, correct?
In a way, yeah.
So it's interesting for me. It's kind of a different thing. It's probably the kind of roguelike that I would like, just because of its resemblance to, you know, typical Metroidvania games. So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I'm not having that hard of a time with it so far, but I haven't really come across any enemies that are that difficult either. A lot of the trickiness has just been from enemies that can throw stuff through walls at you. And of course, you don't really get many health ups either, so you have to play cautiously. And of course, you're not trying to die, so you really try to maintain that balance between, you know, trying to get through areas but maintaining your health at a reasonable rate, because you just know you're not going to get many opportunities to get more health back. But looks pretty interesting, so I'll probably have some more on that next week.
Cool. Look forward to hearing you talk about it. Well, I think we are pretty much at the end of the show today, because we're at about 2 hours, and I'm going to have to call it there. But I wanted to leave a little bit of time in the closing. Seren, do you have anything you want to plug right now?
Yeah, sure. So I am working on two games coming out soon. One of them is coming to Nintendo Switch, and that is Defender's Quest Valley of the Forgotten DX, which James played at E3.
I did.
That game is real cool. It's not a game I'm making, but it's a game I'm working on. So that is a what-if Final Fantasy Tactics met tower defense. So every single tower is a character with stats and equipment, and there's a full story and tons of stages and so much goddamn customization. I'm helping with the QA effort on this game, and I've helped it on QA effort now for four or five releases, and it is a significant QA effort because there's so many accessibility options. You can remap all the controls. You can change the you can scale the difficulty. Say, I want 230% experience and 110% currency and a 40% failure penalty, and the game will adjust. It's almost Smash Brothers like in a smaller way. And then I'm also working on a game that comes out not on Switch, but on iOS, PC, Mac, and Linux on Thursday, by the time you hear this, August 16th, called Evergarden, which is by the studio that made Race the Sun, which came out on Wii U, among other platforms.
I didn't realize it was that soon, jeez.
Yeah, that's out in a week. That game was localized for French, into French by Guillaume, so if there's any issues with the French, you know who to reach out to.
God damn it!
Oh, no, it's,
why can't we get a good French speaker on this show?
I know! Like, come on!
That's a joke.
There's a 0% chance he listens to this anyway. It's fine!
Yes, We've had nothing but positive feedback about pretty much all of our translations. I helped get this game localized in, I think, 10 languages. So, Herculean effort on everyone's behalf. But everything seems to be good for just about any language that you'd expect this game to be in. And it's a it's a puzzle game and an adventure game. It is both. And it's a game that was made sort of as a memorial to the founders of the studio, are brothers, and their mother passed away, and this is like sort of a memorial to her and her love of growing things. It's a super, super intuitive puzzle game where you plant seeds to grow flowers, and you match like flowers to make more complicated flowers. And it starts out being a high score game, and then you get items, and then you get enemies, and then you get unlock the adventure game element, and there's a story going through the whole thing. If you look up a screenshot or a trailer, the graphics are... So, yeah, that's coming to iOS, PC, Mac, Linux on the 16th. You can pre-order it on iOS. If you want the game to come to the Nintendo Switch or any other platform... I am not the person to reach out to.
Okay, I thought this is going to be like the let us know. Okay, thank you.
No, if you tweet at Flipfly, which is with two P's, FLIPPFLY. Let them know if you want this on Switch. And if it does come to Switch, that means my employment contract lasts longer. So,
priorities.
I don't know if you want to help me because I just moved, but no. Like, genuinely, these are two games that I'm not responsible for the actual games. I'm doing a lot of the business work, a lot of the behind-the-scenes work, a lot of stuff that players aren't actually going to see themselves. But, and I'm not seeing royalties on either of them, so, like, I'm not incentivized to help them do well. I just genuinely think, having been close to the development of these games, that they are super cool games that really excel at what they do. Check out Defender's Quest. You can get it on now on PC, PS4, Xbox One, and Vita, coming soon to Switch, which will be the definitive version. It'll have touchscreen support. It'll have multiple controller support. It'll have so many things. And then Evergarden, which is super, super cool. And I'm working on some other stuff that I can't talk about, but that's what's coming out in the new, in the next couple months here.
I feel like we have to ask you every time you're on the show how your game is going.
Ha! Yeah.
I feel like we've asked about it a few times now.
Well, you haven't had me on in like nine. I think you've had me on once this year.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I've been on. I think this is my second 2018 appearance. I haven't been on in a long time.
Okay. So, fair enough.
So the answer has changed. I put a blog post up that no one saw, which is fine. It's more meant to be where I can direct people to. Monochrono is currently on hiatus as I work on other projects and get some other parts of my life in order. Sort of like a mental health. Like, I worked on that game for like 3.5 years straight without anyone seeing it, and it kind of drove me mad.
Understandable.
Because I was this close to a project for 3.5 years, and there were very few people around to tell me if it was any good, and like I couldn't show it to people. So,
gotcha. Yes.
So it is on hiatus. It will come out eventually. It will probably not come out for all the platforms I announced it for, because I announced it for things like the PlayStation 3.
you should call Sony and ask, hey, can I put out a PS3 game?
Well, they approved it. Four years ago for the PS3, like they sent me a kit and everything.
I would like to see their response in like 2020. Like, hey, can I put out a PS3 game? What?
Like you can't, there's not even like the PS Plus incentive, like, and release it for free as a technically as a PS3 game that has cross-buy, because PS3 PS Plus is going games are going away in a couple months, so. Yeah, no, it's... Yeah. Don't count on it coming to every platform I initially announced it for. But when I announced it for those platforms, it was running on those platforms. But some of those platforms are not worth the money now.
Time passes, you know?
Yes, time passes, and, you know, maybe the Vita isn't a safe platform these days.
I just like the idea of you calling Sony in, like, 2020. Hey, can I put out a PS3 game? And they're just like... The fuck no!
When they're gearing up to launch the PS5, yeah.
We don't even know how to do that anymore.
I don't know. It's real dumb. Anyways, that's sort of the status on things. I'm keeping well. I'm working on a bunch of things I can't talk about, or a bunch of things that are uninteresting. I worked on the Xbox One version of 20XDX, which is like a Mega Man X roguelike. That came out on Switch recently. Like things like that. I'm working on a couple Switch games that I can't talk about because I don't think they're announced for Switch. Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah, just I keep busy, but there's also some people don't credit me, and so if they don't credit me, I feel like I probably shouldn't talk about it.
Understood. Well, as always, thank you for being on. I didn't realize we've only had you on once this year. You know why it's getting me, because I talked to you during another podcast when we did the Thirsty Mage episode.
Yeah, we did 4 hours of Persona 5.
Ah!
And and then we probably talked to each other for like a total of like 8-9 hours at E3, and uh-huh. We streamed a bunch. So yep. Like you and I have talked quite a lot. I haven't actually been on RFN very much recently.
Fair enough. We'll as always we'll keep in touch, and we'll have you on again. Greg.
Yes.
We have some music.
We do, given the occasion with the Smash Brothers reveal, felt it had to be something Castlevania, and given the aforementioned infomercial list, I figured it had to be something off that. So, which was certainly plenty. But I decided to go with something from Symphony of the Night, because I have lamented in the past that we live in such a bizarre world that something like Night Trap is available for a Nintendo system, but not Symphony of the Night, but I guess this is the first, the Smash Brothers incorporated Castlevania may be the first step to correcting that to some extent, or at least having some of its soundtrack in there. Konami, if you know, want to start releasing Castlevania games, re-releasing them on the Switch, this might be a good window to do that.
Everybody is releasing collections of even SNK is doing it. They put out a video about 3 Ikari Warriors games. Nobody needs 3 Ikari Warriors games, but they're doing it. You too can do this, Konami.
Yep, so it may be that particular feature of of that peculiarity of our world that Symphony of the Night is not available for Nintendo hardware may be remedied, but of course the soundtrack is, you know, legendary for a reason. And I've picked something here that's kind of perhaps a little bit odd of a choice for Smash Brothers, unless it's been heavily rearranged, because it's quite a sort of tranquil piece, you know, quite a pleasant, not one of the like crazy rocking ones like Tragic Prince or something like that. This is Lost Painting, which, like I said, very sort of relaxing kind of track. And also, I think there was an unused FM synth version of this for Castlevania The Adventure Rebirth that you can look up on the internet if you want another kind of take on it. I guess we'll see if they just use it, you know, as is in Smash, or whether it's rearranged, but this is the original. I rather like it.
Cool. Well, that's going to do it for us today. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Season 5.